Greetings, and welcome to the 17th installment of our podcast series, The Workforce Lens, brought to you by Tarrant County College in North Texas. I am Shannon Bryant, Executive Vice President for Corporate Solutions and Economic Development, and I will be your host, moderating strategic conversations with employers and economic developers on all things related to preparing and growing the workforce today and the future. Please help me welcome today's guest, Dr. Colin Clark. Dr. Clark is the director of the Bush Institute, SMU Economic Growth Initiative, and adjunct professor of economics at SMU. He leads the Bush Institute's work on domestic policy and economic growth. Welcome, Colin. It is a joy to have you here today.
Thanks so much, Shannon. Honored to be here.
Absolutely. Happy to have you here and excited to get into some of the content. So let's start. Can you tell us a little bit about you and tell us about your work at the Bush Institute?
Sure. Well, I'm a native of Dallas. I'll skip through a lot of things, but I actually had 25 years working in the investment industry, and I think having been in the private sector kind of informs what I do. But I'm now engaged in a really exciting, for me at least, second chapter in life. I went back to school, earned a PhD in economics at SMU, and after that had the opportunity to join both the Bush Institute and SMU as an economist.
Do we need to say pony up?
Well, in Tarrant County, I'll be careful about what to say
because okay.
there are rivals here. But yes, of course, I'm an SMU
fan.
We'll
take a pause and say pony up.
Very good. So I really have two jobs. I'm an adjunct professor at economics. I teach a class in modern economic history to undergraduates, mostly juniors and seniors. Most of my time I spend doing think tank work at the Bush Institute. And in particular, what I do, I lead what we call our Blueprint for Opportunity program. And that program is focused on the challenge of creating inclusively prosperous, high opportunity places, regions, cities, towns, neighborhoods. Why place? Because I think we've all become aware from all kinds of evidence that's come up in recent times that where a person is powerfully influences their prospects in life. And it's unrealistic to think that everyone's going to move to, say, Silicon Valley or Manhattan. I really think the path to an economy that works for as many Americans as possible necessarily runs through economic development in places where people are, workforce development where they are, addressing housing challenges and other impediments to people, you know, flourishing, getting ahead in the economy. And so I'm very focused on that. So what we do in our Blueprint for Opportunity program, we're really trying to lay out an analysis of the challenge of what are all the factors holding back places from being high opportunity places? And what does a policy agenda, policy for federal, state, and local government, but also there's a role for the higher ed sector. There's a role for the nonprofit sector. What does a sort of a comprehensive agenda for creating more high opportunity places look like?
Very interesting. It all goes hand in hand. It's like a puzzle, correct?
That's how I view it.
Yeah, absolutely. So tell us with that, what is the current, as far as your opinion, what is the current economics of Texas, specifically North Texas?
Well, I think that when we look at the economics of Texas, Shannon, we really need to look at different scales and understand that at different scales, things look very different. Let me say what I mean by that. Take the state as a whole. People talk a lot about the Texas miracle. In some respects, the state is doing very well economically relative to most other states. But if we break things down a little bit, it so happens last year I had the opportunity to co-author a book called The Texas Triangle, which is about the triangle formed by the four major metropolitan areas of the state, the Dallas-Fort Worth area, Houston, Austin, and San Antonio areas. Quick aside, some say only in Texas would we connect four points on a map with a triangle. But as you know from the map of Texas, it does actually work. But here's the point. The four big metropolitan areas of the state account for almost all the economic growth of the state. We have a very bifurcated situation in which each of those metropolitan areas on the whole have dramatically outperformed most other metro areas as well as rural and small town America in terms of people growth, economic growth, job creation, and so forth. The rest of the state, which amounts to something on the order of a third of the population and a vast area, is really not doing very well. on the whole. Population's not growing. A great many Texas counties that are more small town and rural are shrinking in population. And I think there is a pervasive sense that things aren't going very well economically. So that's the first. We have to make that scale division. Right. So Dallas-Fort Worth metro area, like, say, the Austin or Houston metros, doing very, very well on the whole. But then we have to look a little bit more closely and realize that the Dallas-Fort Worth metropolitan area is a very big place with a lot of contrast within it. So it is very easy to find some of the fastest growing, most booming places in America. I'm thinking largely of very fast growing suburban places in Collin County and Denton County in particular, north of Dallas and Fort Worth. And then it's very easy to find places, and I don't mean, you know, small little corners, but major parts of the city of Dallas and major parts of the city of Fort Worth that are experiencing great economic distress. For example, southern Dallas, the way it's conventionally defined, is home to about 600,000 people. Okay, that's out of the metropolitan area, has almost 8 million, but 600,000 of them live in the southern part of the city of Dallas. That whole area, according to data we've put together, has experienced essentially no housing growth, no job growth at all this century, even though the population's edged up a little bit. So from an opportunity point of view, things have actually been going in reverse in southern Dallas. I think this, although I'm not as much of an expert on the city of Fort Worth, I think the same thing goes for like the southeastern part of the city of Fort Worth.
I would say that was true. So what are the initiatives underway that you can speak to that are going about to counteract some of the issues that you're finding in your studies?
Well, if we talk about, in particular, let's take Dallas County and Tarrant County, where you have these kind of big core cities that have booming areas and struggling areas. I think that in both cases, there is a great deal of talk, great deal of study, actually, I think probably more than there's ever been before in my lifetime and yours, which is heartening, of what to do about the struggling parts of our cities. In North Texas and in big cities around the country. So the fact that it's being heavily discussed, studied, that there's, you know, task forces being established, the mayors are paying attention to a very high degree is good news. The actual progress to date is much more modest, but I think that there's efforts afoot. So what's actually happening? I think you can maybe kind of break things down into sort of the economic development piece, which classically means get jobs into these struggling areas. We can also look at workforce development, training people so that they can do 21st century jobs that will earn a living wage and create upward mobility for them and themselves and their families, and housing. Just on all three, I would say we're in the early stages of what could be very, you know, potentially large progress. And I know you and your institution play a large role in that, and the Dallas County Dallas College does. So there's plenty of good efforts afoot. On the economic development front, take the city of Dallas. The city council has passed a kind of a pretty long list of initiatives that in some form or another are intended to essentially bring jobs and economic vitality to southern Dallas. They're just now in the process of creating a semi-autonomous, as I would call it, economic development corporation, something many cities have, but heretofore the city of Dallas has not had that. And I think there's a growing appreciation for what would it take to bring jobs to this vast area. I think there's an understanding, for example, that there are some institutions that are working quite well in the southern part of the city, so you might want to sort of build out from those pockets of success. I'm thinking, for example, in the higher ed world, University of North Texas at Dallas and Paul Quinn College in the far southern part of the city. I'm thinking of major investments in real estate that are bringing with them exciting new activities, such as Reimagine Redbird, taking what was, in a sense, a deeply distressed old, you know, enclosed mall and massively renovating it. Peter Brodsky, who's full disclosure, a friend of mine, and I'm an investor in his deal, but has done a magnificent job taking this old facility. Most people didn't believe it could really work. And of course, the idea was not to just modernize the mall and have like a, you know, a 21st century version of a mall, like out of Stranger Things or something, but actually to take that space and totally reimagine it so that now, for example, they're just now opening a major facility owned by UT Southwestern. They will You'll have a children's health facility there. So you'll have major healthcare facilities and a variety of other activities that wouldn't in the past have taken place at a mall. So there are good economic development efforts afoot. Maybe we can come back to the workforce development and housing ones as well.
Sure, absolutely. So let's transition a little bit to talk about businesses coming to North Texas. So recently, CNBC recently named America's top states for businesses in 2022. Texas is listed as number 5. The first was North Carolina, followed by Washington, Virginia, and Colorado. What is your opinion of our current economic state as it relates to workforce and our ability to attract and retain the businesses in North Texas?
Well, I'm happy to hear that it was number 5, kind of for two reasons. One, I want to see our state succeed, and I want to see it be a great place to do business. Who doesn't, who's here in Texas? So 5 out of 50 is pretty good. Yes. But I think at the same time, there is a sometimes I think a sort of triumphalism going on out there in people's thoughts on how Texas is positioned that can be a little dangerous. Complacency is never good for any kind of person, business, or for that matter, city or state that's kind of riding high. And so being 5th versus 1st is maybe at least a small nudge that we still have some things to think about. Why do we, despite this massive movement of businesses into Texas, why do we typically fall a few slots below number 1? I think there are two big factors that people oftentimes cite, and we've talked about in our work. One is we actually have some fairly restrictive rules that hold back some kinds of small business. For example, a very hot issue is around occupational licensing, rules that the state sets that basically determine how stringent are the rules to get a license to operate some kind of small business. The classic case everybody likes to bring up is how tough are the rules, for example, to become a hair braider. Another example I've done some research on recently is food trucks. How tough are the rules governing whether you can start up a food truck? A food truck is a great potential entrepreneurial business for a chef who wants to be an entrepreneur to get started. It's a lot less capital than an indoor restaurant. It's a good way to get going, but it also tends to be a pretty heavily regulated industry. In the big cities of Texas, there's a ranking out there about how kind of business friendly those rules are, and actually, we're kind of middle of the pack. We're not actually among the best places to do business in a couple of those very specific fields. So we do have some cleanup of rules to do. But the other issue, which maybe looms ultimately largest, is great places to do business. Yes, they're going to get the rules right. Yes, they're going to have, moderate taxes and reasonably commerce-friendly regulatory frameworks. But they're also going to create the workforce that can do the work. When businesses, particularly large ones, decide where they want to operate, I think we'd probably all agree one of the top considerations in their mind is can they find the people that they want to hire to do the job?
Absolutely. They need a skilled workforce to fill their pipeline and sustain it for the long term, right?
Of course. It goes without saying, and yet perhaps it needs to be said, because I think that, any time, and I've had the opportunity, as I know you have, to talk to a lot of employers, also a lot of economic developers who are trying to attract employers to different parts of, say, the North Texas region, as well as along the way, I've talked to people competing against us in other parts of the country. And everyone says the same thing. It's all about the people. It's about the talent. It's about the workforce. Can you find it in the place you're trying to, in the place you're operating or thinking about operating? And that's becoming a tougher and tougher challenge for businesses. We have, on the one hand, we have an increasingly knowledge-centric economy. In general, the skills that businesses are looking for are going up. People need to know more than they used to know. But on the other hand, we have really difficult demographic trends. The total number of people who are in the working age population in the United States is just barely growing now. That's never occurred before in the history of our country. So, supply and demand, it's challenging. And so if you're a city, region, state, et cetera, I would say that from soup to nuts, from pre-K education right through higher ed, community college, training programs, the whole continuum of creating, in a sense, lifelong learners that can figure out how to do the jobs that employers need, that's issue number one. That needs to be the top priority for our, state and local government.
Right. So can you speak a little bit about that from a technical standpoint? How does education and training impact our economy?
Well, first of all, I'll relate what I think of as a kind of one of the most powerful conclusions from our work, and I would say from the work of economists, you know, for a long time. And that is education, human capital, talent, in effect, over a long enough period of time, it's not just the most important thing. It's the only thing. It is the thing that determines the economic growth, the success or failure of not just cities, but nations. So, for example, in our work, I think we've added to a pretty substantial academic literature that shows very clearly the states, the cities that have the highest educational attainment levels also have the highest income levels. It's pretty predictable. And moreover, we find, I think, interestingly, it's not just that if you individually have a relatively high education level, like you've done a master's degree or professional degree of some sort, that you make more money. That is certainly the case. Maybe the less obvious point is that if you live in a city or a region that on the whole has relatively high educational attainment levels, even if you yourself have, let's say, a somewhat lower education level, you make more because we all make each other more productive.
We all rise together.
We all rise together. It's good to be a working person in a well-educated place.
Absolutely. Can you speak a little bit about the education attainment level in North Texas specifically?
Yes. So in the Dallas-Fort Worth metropolitan area, we're kind of a middle performer among major metro areas. On the whole, big metro areas and big cities in America have somewhat higher educational attainment levels than smaller ones in America today. And we benefit from that, from our relatively large size. But we don't outperform relative to other large metropolitan areas. We look kind of middle of the pack. We're lower than some of the big kind of tech-focused metro areas of the coasts, of the West Coast and the Northeast. We're higher than some other, typically higher than Midwestern or Southeastern metros. We're kind of in the middle. But that sort of masks a certain amount of variation within the population. We're a little bit of a, you know, a tale of two cities. We all know that there's great inequality in America. I would say we have pretty severe inequality in educational attainment levels across different groups based on race, based on the economic circumstances of one's parents. So when you start to disaggregate things, for example, you find that, in the populations that are fortunate enough to live in like suburban cities with really good school systems, actually we create great educational attainment levels. In some of the most economically distressed places, the most underinvested places in North Texas, we don't create very high educational attainment levels. That's a big challenge for us. We got to work on that.
Absolutely. So, Colin, with the work that both you and I do, we can both see the landscape right now for Texas, for North Texas specifically, since we're both here. There's a lot of high-tech companies moving their operations here into North Texas, and I'm out every day talking to those companies as well. I'm sure you are as well. And we, with those positions that they're bringing here, bearing highly tech, their higher education attainment level, with that growing population of a more educated workforce, the more we see diversity of our population grow. How is our economy impacted by diversity on business?
Diversity is a complex topic, and the realities are changing as we speak. So let me try to say two or three things about it. Number one, inevitably, the workforce of North Texas is going to become much more ethnically diverse in the sense that the white percentage is going to go down. Essentially all groups of non-white populations are going to go up, particularly Hispanic and Asian populations. We know that. That this is inevitable. We can see it in the young people who are already here, and we can see it in the probability that we will continue to have significant inflows of immigrants, in particular from Latin America and East and South Asia. So that's happening whether we like it or not. It does create both challenges and opportunities. A challenge is that we already have, as I think I noted, rather significant educational disparities between groups, and we've got a lot of work to do to address some of the injustices and the obstacles that have stood in the way of, for example, our Black and Hispanic populations, you know, catching up to where our white and Asian populations are. That's the reality. If we fail to do it in North Texas, then the changing demographics mean that our workforce will not be very well prepared for mid-21st century work. So that's right. That's clearly the case. Now, diversity, to say a couple more things about what it means going forward to live in a more diverse region and a more diverse state and a more diverse country. Economists have overwhelmingly found that diversity is good. Diversity tends to lead to more creative places, more innovative places. Wherever the diversity comes from, we're not only talking about places that may be in which you know, American cities that grow more diverse over time. We're talking about all of human history. When places are magnets for newcomers from elsewhere and you get this great mixing of people, mixing of ideas and cultures and so forth, out of it tends to come innovation, creativity, and economic growth. That has been a great, you know, driver of progress in history, including in, in modern day cities around the world. At the same time, diversity is a kind of a political challenge because humans don't always immediately adapt to it so well. Sometimes they get concerned about a changing world around them. And so what we see, for example, in the literature is that places that are become significantly more diverse can face some political stumbling blocks. There, you oftentimes see, for example, less investment in education and other public goods for the very natural human reason that if voters are looking at the populations that are growing and saying, well, that's not that, you know, those aren't my kids. Those are different kids from different part of town, ultimately from a different country. Say, I'm kind of less interested in investing a whole lot in that. It is a natural human thing, but it's nonetheless a challenge that great cities and great states and great nations figure out how to get past. We have work to do to get past it.
Right. And you have to communicate about it, right? You have to have communication. You have to be able to make plans and
absolutely. I'm doing research right now. We haven't come out with this report yet, but we're going to in, I think, a month or two, about immigrants in America's cities, nationally, not just in North Texas. And one of the things we say is that we think in a world in which the foreign-born population, it amounts to about 17% of the people in the metropolitan areas of America. It's a pretty large percentage. Leaders, whether they be mayors, higher ed leaders, business leaders, if they're smart out of not just, let's say, compassion, but out of economic self-interest, they will declare their town, their city, their company to be a very welcoming place. They will say, we're glad you're here. You, everyone has a chance to contribute, and we absolutely embrace this or that growing population of people from wherever it is, from South Asia, from Afghanistan, from Central America. And we want to help them learn, earn, and contribute.
Very nice. I like that a lot. So let's shift for a moment, because this is a great segue into the next question I have for you, is around small businesses and entrepreneurship, and specifically. America has more than 30 million small businesses currently. What are your thoughts on current and future state of small business ownership here, specifically, again, coming back to North Texas? And how do small businesses play a role in our local economy of DFW?
Well, small businesses play a critically important role, Shannon. I think that it's important, first of all, to recognize that neither small businesses nor large enterprises exist in a vacuum. In a healthy economic ecosystem, they're each, in a sense, playing off of each other. You know, the success of a great big enterprise creates all kinds of niches for small businesses to fill. And in a place with a really thriving small business environment, well, some of those companies become large. Right. There's a lot of complexity to it. We have a challenge in America, which is that the rate of new startups each year has been going down since the 90s, even though our population is considerably larger. So on a per capita basis, it's much lower. There's a lot of discussion about why that might be. Is it cultural? Is it sort of the aging population? Because maybe those of us who are somewhat older are less inclined to go out and take a risk and start businesses. Is it perhaps that the environment has grown less friendly through various regulations and so on that maybe have kind of over-regulated some industries out of being? Maybe in the tech world, some would argue, or not just tech, but in a handful of sectors, that maybe the growing market power of a handful of giant companies has sort of closed off a lot of niches. that might otherwise have been, kind of occupied by some small businesses. Lots of things to debate. It's not really my focus to try to resolve which of those it is, but I'm very focused on how do you create the best possible conditions for small businesses to get started, to grow, and to thrive. And there's a lot you could say about it. We were just talking about the role, for example, of newcomers to, say, to North Texas of all kinds, whether they be newcomers from elsewhere in the country or from elsewhere in the world. It turns out that even though the total number of new businesses being started each year has gone down, actually the number of businesses being started by immigrant entrepreneurs in America's cities has skyrocketed. So a surprisingly large number, something like more than 25% of all small businesses today are actually started by immigrant entrepreneurs. They're punching way above their weight relative to their percentage of the population. Maybe it's something about the immigrant experience. Maybe people sort of self-select when they come from other countries and incur a lot of economic and cultural challenges to get here, that they're already, in a sense, enterprising risk takers on average. It's hard to say, but nonetheless, that fact is very evident. So creating conditions in which newcomers want to come to North Texas and start businesses here, that would be part of creating or building on the success of our entrepreneurial environment here. I think that there are a number of categories where Texas and the big cities of North Texas have not totally arrived in creating a sensible business-friendly environment for startups. There's lots of categories. I mentioned food trucks, but there's plenty. We could get as long lists of sectors that really could use some sensible amount of, Texan deregulation. We like deregulation in Texas. We've got plenty of room where we could actually do it quite sensibly in ways that would be all good news. No downside. And then, education, right? If the startups that come along are likely to be increasingly in knowledge-centric industries, well, we have to have a population of people who have the knowledge.
Exactly. And we have to have the educational institutions who can provide that.
Absolutely. That's core.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess you may have answered part of this question, but from your viewpoint, is there a disparity of diversity among small businesses in our region specifically? And what does that mean regarding future challenges of those businesses and their ability to survive and thrive in the region?
I guess you mean diversity in terms of or disparity in terms of different groups, how they're represented.
Absolutely,
yes. Yeah. So first of all, we clearly have this phenomenon of immigrant entrepreneurs. Immigrant entrepreneurship is alive and well in the cities of America, and it's certainly alive and well in North Texas. So, for example, we see a really large role, for example, from Indian Americans starting all kinds of knowledge-centric businesses, particularly in the North Texas suburbs, like in Collin and Denton County. So there's all kinds of wonderful success stories there. So we are as good a place as any place in America for immigrant entrepreneurs to settle and to pursue their dreams and start a business. On the other hand, we also see underrepresentation of our Black population. That raises a lot of questions about how is it that one helps aspiring Black entrepreneurs to, for example, access capital, to access the kind of networks that help a small business get going, the social networks, if you will. I think there's a lot of efforts afoot. I mean, in Dallas, we have something called the Dallas Entrepreneurs Center. I think there's a comparable entity in Fort Worth. I can't remember the name. So we have these incubator entities that are consciously trying to help aspiring entrepreneurs in all parts of our cities and from all groups to pursue their dreams, to get a business off the ground.
Right. And I'll make a plug just there real quick for Tarrant County, for Tarrant County College in particular. A few years ago, we started a program called the Everyday Entrepreneur Venture Fund that is focused specifically on minority businesses in Tarrant County. And we've been running that for a couple of years now, working on our second cohort. And it's those minority businesses with customized education, mentorship, and seed funding to help them elevate their business to the next level.
That's fantastic. And Dallas College in Dallas County is doing similar things. Yes. And, I think if we look at this in the broader historical context, I think it's important to recognize that programs like this are relatively new. We're doing a better job today than at any time before in our history at trying to address those disparities. And that, I guess I'm a congenital optimist. That makes me optimistic that given time, we will actually see good success with programs like the Tarrant County College one that you mentioned. So it's, you know, I think people need to recognize this is a long game. There's not some kind of, you know, magical dust one can spread and instantly a bunch of startup businesses happen. We all know that the failure rate among startup businesses is high. It's a risky thing. It's a very much a, you know, a kind of a world in which people sometimes sort of fail serially and then finally arrive at the right idea. We all know this history. This is how, you know, Silicon Valley was built, and it's how a great many small businesses were built. So I think if we take the view we're in it for the long haul, we try to create a good, favorable environment for people to start a business. We try to create the resources, for example, in higher ed and in the incubator programs and so forth. Give it long enough, I think that we will we will see some of those disparities close.
Very good. So that's a great segue into kind of a unique question I have for you, Colm, and that is, if you were to write a recipe for North Texas economic success, what ingredients would that include and why?
It's a wonderful question, Shannon. Thank you. I had the opportunity to write a report that came out early this year that basically argued that throughout history – and certainly throughout America's modern history, that there is a kind of – there's a classic formula for the success of cities, regions, and, you know, places, even states, for economic success. So let me state that formula, then I try to apply it to North Texas.
Sure.
Basically, I argue that cities that have been successful as great commercial centers, great magnets for talent, great innovation centers, business centers, and so forth, have typically had five characteristics that they, you know, they're not perfect in every one, but they tend to be outperformers. Number one, there is a very heavy focus on education and innovation. Let me say, by the way, that these are may sound like cliches, but I could easily explain why a great many places don't live up to these ideas. So number one, they care a lot about innovation and education. Number two, they have generally commerce-friendly at regulatory environments. It's a good place to do business. Number three, they do better than most at affordable quality of life. They're good places where people want to live. They may not. They're typically not really cheap places to live because people want to be there, and that drives up home prices, for example. But they're not outlandishly expensive, such that only the wealthiest can live there. Number four, they're very much welcoming of newcomers, something that cities oftentimes find it hard to be. Newcomers of all kinds from elsewhere, because oftentimes it's the person who just showed up that brings the new idea. And lastly, they have a strong sense of community, a sense of shared destiny, such that people will work together to solve common problems. Okay. Sounds a little pie in the sky, but in this report, I really tried to illustrate all of the ways, including with a lot of recent data, in which cities that outperform on these metrics do actually, you know, thrive better. They succeed. They people want to be there. The populations grow. The economies grow. Their jobs. There's a lot of innovation, new businesses, and so forth. So applying that to North Texas, I would say we're better than average on some, and probably not fully where we want to be on others. I think on the education and innovation front, we need to recognize that we've been an okay player in general on creating educational attainment among the people who grow up here, but we've been phenomenally successful at attracting highly educated people from elsewhere. We need to kind of rebalance that a little bit, and so, you know, put in a plug for Tarrant County College and the other higher ed institutions of our region. You all are front and center, or we are. I work at SMU as well. We're all front and center in trying to, to make that recipe work in North Texas. That's one thing. We do in North Texas better than average on the affordable quality of life front, for sure. It's a major reason why so many people have been moving here. But we do have housing challenges that could undermine that advantage over time. Particularly, we have that in our core cities. Dallas and Austin are probably the two most dysfunctional housing markets in the state of Texas. Fort Worth, somewhat better. Typically, the fast-growing suburbs are a lot better, although they, too, are kind of challenged. Can we build enough housing to keep up with rising demand and not become deeply unaffordable, as, for example, cities on the West Coast have? So we need fixes to our housing policies, for sure. I actually think we do quite well on welcoming newcomers on the whole. I think we do reasonably well on the sense of community part, although as we grow more diverse, we have work to do on that. And we, on the whole, we've been talking about this today, we do really rather well on operating commerce-friendly policies. So if I was to say, what do we most need to focus on? Above all, number one, education. Second of all, we really need to address our some of our housing policy challenges and essentially produce more supply growth to keep up with the demand and maintain the tremendous advantage in affordable quality of life that we have had over some other regions of the country.
Very nice. So, Colm, you obviously do a lot of research. Obviously, you have to read a lot of books. I'm curious to know, what books are you currently reading?
Thank you for asking, because I love talking about books. So I'm undisciplined. I always have more than one book going at once. But let me just talk about two groups. Number one, I really like, in addition to reading kind of theoretical type books, I really like reading books about particular places at particular times. In effect, how they got the way they are or what they're currently trying to accomplish. So two that I currently are part of the way through that are very good. One is about the development of Florida. It's called Bubble in the Sun by Christopher Knowles. Very interesting story about how cities like Miami actually came to be. Going back to the early 20th century, there was a great Florida land boom in the 1920s. So Florida developed in a very particular way. Another book is called City on the Verge by Mark Pendergrast, and it's much more contemporary. It's about efforts to really kind of transform Atlanta, particularly it's particularly centers on the development of the Beltline Trail, which before long will fully encircle the city of Atlanta. You know, and all kinds of businesses and apartment buildings and so forth are coming up alongside the trail. People, turns out, like living next to trails where they can, you know, walk and bike and so on. So that's been kind of a transformative project. It really tells that story. So I like these kind of stories that are not just theoretical, but get down to so what really is happening in Atlanta, say. And I had the chance to write a book that to some degree does that about Texas cities myself with my co-authors, The Texas Triangle. So that's one category. The other category is I love history in general. I love to try to understand what were people up against in their own time, and also how did we get to where we are. I've had a really deep interest for the last several years in 19th century America, because I think in the 19th century, for better or for worse, we created the world that we live in today. That was a world in which America rose to become, you know, the most prosperous major economy in the world. But it was also a time that created some profound injustices, we all know. So I've been reading a biography of Ulysses Grant by Ron Chernow, which is an absolutely brilliant biography that really caused me to completely rethink the role of Grant, particularly in not just winning the Civil War for the Union, but as a president, really trying to make Reconstruction work to create more to address at least some of the enormous injustices facing the newly freed people in the aftermath of the Civil War. It's a great story. And another book called "The Zealot and the Emancipator" by a historian named Brand is about the zealot being John Brown, who you might recall raided Harper's Ferry in an event that helped to spark the Civil War, the emancipator being Abraham Lincoln. So this kind of tells us something about the struggle to contain the growth of slavery in the years just before the Civil War, tells us about the coming of the Civil War, and has some fresh insights, I think, into a topic that never, ever grows old, which is the greatness of Abraham Lincoln. So very interested in how we got here historically.
Very nice. So I'm taking some copious notes of books that I need to add to my library. So thank you for that. And I would be remiss if I did not ask the question. So pertaining to the book that you co-authored, The Texas Triangle, where can we find that?
Well, it's available on Amazon. It's also available in local bookstores. So I know they have it at the local bookstore in Dallas, in Tarabang Books. I hope that it's available at local bookstores in Fort Worth. I need to check. So, yeah, it's published published by Texas A&M Press. I had the opportunity to co-author it with three great colleagues from around the state. So learned a lot about, you know, San Antonio and Houston and so forth. So I do think that we had a kind of a story to tell in the Texas Triangle that was a little bit fresh. We really wanted to get Texans to rethink, in a sense, look in the mirror and see Texas as it really is today, as a metropolitan state, as it's the world of, you know, oil wells and ranches and so forth. It's still with us to a certain degree, but Texas actually has a larger percentage of its population living in big cities and metropolitan areas than most states. So Texas is something very, very different than people oftentimes think of it as.
Absolutely. Well, I will be grabbing a copy, and hopefully I can get a signature next time I see you.
I would love to do that.
Great. So, Colm, just to close here, I always like to ask my guests this question. What advice might you share with our younger generation regarding their future planning for education, job readiness, and career success?
I'll tell you what I tell my daughters. I expect it's probably like a lot of your other guests have probably said. Be a lifelong learner. Take your formal education very seriously as long as you can. Get everything you possibly can out of it, and then stay at learning for the rest of your life. Because the world keeps changing. You've got to update your skills, your knowledge of what's going on. I would tend to advise, I would certainly advise that people go through their formal schooling with a plan, that they really want to sort of learn a set of, a kind of a body of knowledge that will put them on a path towards, you know, towards a the kind of career that they want to have. But at the same time, I kind of caution against overly narrow approaches to one's education. I have found in my own life, you know, having done, I was very fortunate and had a really wonderful liberal education, that, you know, I find in my actual adult life and in my work, I call on everything I did in school. The math classes, the history classes, the science classes, the literature classes. So that's not a case for being sort of directionless and just doing a little, you know, kind of a little bite here and a little bit bite there at the you know, cafeteria of education. There is certainly a case for achieving some depth and some genuine knowledge of, you know, of certain fields and certain kind of bodies of knowledge. But, you know, I think that I've never met anyone who kind of looked back and said, a whole lot of what I did in my education was a big waste of time. On the contrary, I've encountered countless people who have said, I wish I had done more.
Yeah, it may not have made a whole lot of sense while we were doing it, but later in life, it sure circles back, doesn't it?
Absolutely. You know, I would also say that to any young person, once they're actually in a field, once they're doing some kind of job, to recognize in addition to just doing the job well and giving their best every day, they also should become students of the wider context, the wider you know, what's going on in the economy, in the sector that they operate in, because there is no job that is not in some sense getting disrupted by technological change. And young people need to be students of that and stay on the right side of it. I when I first was in the investment world, I learned how to do a job that barely exists anymore, which was being a kind of an analyst of stocks who could, you know, could build a, take the financial statements and, you know, build a model of the company's, you know, future earnings and so forth. Well, things that took me days to do, the computers now do in seconds. And so actually, frankly, a lot fewer people do what I used to do. And the skills I learned, you know, kind of became obsolete. On the other hand, hopefully, I stayed at, you know, trying to keep modernizing the skills so that I could stay, you know, active in what I was doing. And I would recommend the same to anybody.
Very nice. Any other items you'd like to share with our listening audience today as we close out?
Well, you know, we've been talking about North Texas a lot, Shannon, and I guess bottom line message I want to convey is North Texans are bullish on the future. I think that in general, we have a sense that we're on a good path. And I think people should be bullish. I think they should look forward to a day when it's likely the case that, for example, the Dallas-Fort Worth metropolitan area will grow larger than the Chicago metro area and become America's third largest. It is probable that we will grow as a center of all kinds of industries. I think we'll grow as a technology center. I think we'll grow as a life science and biotech center in quite a few categories. I think that, you know, that the North Texas of 20 years from now will look very different than the North Texas of today. And on the whole, it will be a more prosperous, booming place. And you can't say that about every you know, region and city of America. So it's right to be bullish, but at the same time, it's always wrong to be complacent. And I think that I would really urge listeners to contemplate whatever they're doing, how can they actually take on the hard work of building that future? Because it doesn't just happen, right? If we are to help raise up the workforce that can do the jobs of 20 years from now, 2042. We won't just happen upon that. We will have built our institutions, built all kinds of, you know, specific programs within Tarrant County College, within our whole higher ed system. We will have created new pathways for an increasingly diverse population to go from, pre-K all the way into a career. There's a lot of work ahead to do that. So I, salute you for what you're doing. And the same thing goes in, businesses, whatever someone is doing, wherever they have a chance to, make a difference, I would just say, put their shoulder to it and lean into the challenge of creating a bright future for our region and our state and our world.
Dr. Colum Clark, thank you. It has been an honor having you here today.
Thank you so much, Shannon.
We appreciate it. And to our listening audience, we appreciate you listening to The Workforce Lens, and we look forward to hearing and seeing from you on the next edition. Thank you.